using it in a very divisive manner just to make money. Whereas these people who are being displaced, and majority of them stay in their own country, you know, a fraction of that population crosses borders, and a fraction of that population then crosses international borders. So in those circumstances, we first need to talk about providing support to people so that they do not have to cross borders. And crossing borders means they are living in a real desperate situation. And that's why they leave everything and cross borders and take so much of risk. So instead of, you know, this particular crisis providing opportunity to the surveillance industry to make money, we all should be coming together and showing solidarity to these people who are getting displaced, and support them
so that they can rebuild their lives. We want to thank you so much of Climate Action Network. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Stay safe.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closures of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/kboomradio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/kboo.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kboo radio.
We also provide content to the Free Music Archive,
an interactive library of high-quality legal audio downloads.
That's at freemusicarchive.org/curator/KBOO.
You can find all this and more on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Thanks for listening.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Up on the KBOO Evening News. Vaccines for kids in Oregon are now approved, but are they available? How international talks about climate change could affect future wildfires in Oregon. And no debate allowed on voting rights again. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, November 4th, 2021. I'm Annette Newell. Thank you so much for joining us. Multiple devastating wildfire seasons have hit Oregon. Now some say action on climate change is needed to mitigate them. As Eric Tegedoff reports, now leaders from around the world are hearing about the U.S. plan to tackle climate change.
As leaders from around the world meet in Glasgow, the United States' plan to tackle climate change is coming into focus. The Build Back Better Act in Congress would invest about $550 billion to cut the country's carbon emissions. Oregon State Representative Paul Evans is co-chair of the Elected Officials to Protect America Leadership Council, an organization made up largely of veterans. He spoke while traveling to Glasgow for the United Nations Climate Change Conference, or COP26, where he says there will be plenty of big speeches. But he adds that the conference also brings together leaders who are taking climate action with smaller steps.
The real value is you get people in the room who are fighting the same fight, and they get to feed off the energy, and they get to recognize it. Yeah, this is a huge, huge project, but it's just like my training instructor in the Air Force said, you eat an elephant one bite at a time.
The conference runs through November 12th. Supporters of the Build Back Better Act say the current framework of the package gives the Biden administration the tools it needs to cut the country's carbon pollution to half of 2005 levels by 2030. Evans believes the package could be one of the most important pieces of legislation in his lifetime.
It's going to be an historic investment in actually preparing for disasters, mitigating the effects thereof. The climate action job package that they have in there, I think, is going to be transformational.
Republicans consistently have opposed the Build Back Better Act because they say it's too costly. Evans says the stakes are high to act on climate change. He notes that the changes already are affecting Oregon, with 1 million acres burning in 2020, more than 800,000 this year, and dwindling snowpack from shorter winters also reducing water in the state.
Nature's changing. So we either approach this from a can-do approach, or we sit on the sidelines and watch the future of our children and grandchildren evaporate, literally.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Kids between the ages of 5 and 11 are now eligible to get a COVID-19 vaccination, and already many local vaccine sites are booked up for the coming weeks. The CDC and the FDA gave emergency approval for the lower dose shots for kids earlier this week. The doses began arriving in the state on Monday. In Oregon, that adds around 300,000 kids who can get vaccinated, and parents are scrambling to find appointments. They can get the vaccines through pediatricians and local health providers. Portland Public Schools plan to host vaccination clinics at 8 elementary schools in the near future. The new group of people who can get the vaccine is large, and it's in high demand, which means it won't be possible to vaccinate all kids within the first week or so. Health officials say that the supplies and appointments are not going to be anywhere near as scarce, though, as when the adult vaccines became available earlier this year. The Oregon Health Authority recommends using the Get Vaccinated Oregon online tool to find appointments for kids getting their first COVID-19 shots. Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler has laid out a proposal to increase the police budget. This comes after a record year of shootings in the city, including 1,000 gun violence incidents and 72 deaths. Wheeler is saying the city has a $62 million surplus, and he wants to use some of the money to restaff Portland police and invest in public safety. He's calling for the hiring of 40 public safety support specialists who can respond to lower priority non-emergency calls. He also wants to hire a dean of police education and training and spend $2 million on body cameras for Portland police. He's also proposing offering signing bonuses of as much as $25,000 for new police officers. Oregon Coast voters tackled some prickly issues related to tourism in the election on Tuesday, including the sales tax and short-term rentals like Airbnb and Vrbo. KBOO's Althea Billings has more.
Voters on the Oregon coast on Tuesday considered adding sales tax to restaurant purchases to help fund public services like the fire department, libraries, and the police. Cannon Beach passed the measure with 52% of voters approving it, while the same tax failed in Newport. Cannon Beach will now add a 5% tax to restaurant diners' bills. Since the Oregon coast is a major attraction for tourists, many hope the tax will help drive more revenue for basic services. Tourists were also a question on the ballot in Lincoln County. 58% of voters passed a measure to ban short-term vacation rentals like Airbnb and Vrbo over the next 5 years in unincorporated Lincoln County. Existing rentals will be phased out over the next 5 years, and the ban stops any new licenses from being approved. The ban doesn't impact larger towns, which can still host those short-term rentals. Those who supported the measure say that short-term rental guests created a nuisance for permanent residents, with the likes of trash, noise, and illegal parking. They also said that short-term rentals were making the area less affordable for year-round neighbors. Opponents said that vacation rentals and tourists are good for the local economy overall. This was a hot-button issue, with 44% of eligible voters turning in a ballot, which is a really high rate for an off-year election. For KBOO News, I'm Althea Billings.
A pandemic, major supply chain fiascos, and a holiday season. Mix them up and look out. I talked to personal finance expert Trey Bodge for some advice on handling a tricky time in the months ahead, how to save money, and how to keep your vulnerable loved ones safer.
It's going to be a different type of holiday shopping season this year, first of all. How is it going to be different? I mean, last year we were dealing with COVID. This year, we're on top of that, we have supply chain disruptions, and they're trying to hire people, and there's a hiring shortage of people out there, a trucking shortage. How is all that going to affect us?
Yeah, so from the shopper's perspective, this could be a challenging holiday shopping season. And the good thing is that we're talking about this now. So if consumers haven't started already, I would suggest starting early on your holiday shopping, especially if you have very specific things in mind. It might make sense to start looking for them now and placing those orders to ensure that you get them on time.
Can you pretty much expect that you're going to have some hiccups in terms of, because of both the supply chain disruptions and the delivery delays and problems throughout the country?
I would say for very specific items. So for instance, if you're shopping for a toy that's been popping up on the hot toy list, or if there's an item that a teen or tween on your list wants that's trending on TikTok, or a specific electronic item due to the chip shortage, yes, you might encounter some hiccups. And so I do think starting early is a good idea. And, you know, I know that we're suggesting shopping before the big Black Friday, Cyber Monday sale period, but the good news is that retailers are offering sales now, but they are coming and going. So I would suggest signing up for promotional emails from the retailers that you'd like to shop with, so you'll be in the loop when they do launch a sale.
What kind of deals can we expect this year?
So there will be lots of deals starting now all the way through the Christmas and Hanukkah holidays. Again, they will be rolling, so I would sign up for those emails. And then I do think that consumers need to get a little bit creative about extra ways to save. Of course, the consumer price index is quite high at the moment, so prices will be higher than expected. So for instance, with AARP, who I'm partnering with, they have a lot of great deals that you can take advantage of. So for instance, at Walgreens, you can earn between 7-10% cash rewards on Walgreens branded beauty and wellness products. So that's a great option for gift giving. If you are planning to ship your products, shipping prices are a bit high, but with your AARP membership, you can save 5% off domestic and international shipping. So these are the things that consumers will need to do to try to stay on budget. So save a little bit as they go, and you should hopefully come out okay.
Do you have some advice for gifts we can give to people who we can't see in person this year?
Sure. So obviously, because of COVID, we are still concerned about this. We may see more family members than we did last year, but we may not see everyone. And so I do think that shopping early would be helpful, because especially if you're shipping gifts from a retailer or brand, you want to get that order placed and just let the recipient know there might be something arriving a little bit early. And that would, of course, be the good news. And then I think gift cards are a great way to go. You can order gift cards on a gift card site and send an email notification for that. I think subscription boxes are a great option as well. They'll receive an email notification, and then maybe they'll get that exciting subscription box in January. So something to look forward to. I think those might be good options for those friends and relatives who are far away.
Any advice for staying in touch with our family and loved ones during the holiday season this year?
Yeah, I think it's really important to remember that if you're not going to be seeing a relative, particularly if there's someone who lives on their own, to keep in touch with them, maybe set up more regular calls or FaceTimes with them. Maybe it's weekly or daily just to check in. You can maybe show off your holiday decor at home and they can do theirs. Just to interact and stay in touch throughout the holiday season, I think, is a good idea if you're not going to be seeing someone for the holidays.
And that was my talk with personal finance expert Trey Bodge. Oregon's model for mental health crises impacts rural communities. Broadband grows better corn. And time stops for no one, including cows. All of these stories in this edition of the Yonder Report on news in our rural communities.
From the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. Many farmers say their future depends on better broadband.
Any farm is actually a small business.
Heather Hampton Nodal farms in South Central Illinois. High-speed internet is critical for advances, from improved fertilizer placement to soil health. And Nodal says farmers need to be able to access software from the field.
So the speed of that data really matters, especially when it comes to making decisions related to marketing.
Not being able to bank electronically also hurts rural residents who rely on the United States Postal Service to pay their bills. Last month, first-class mail was slowed from 3 days to upwards of 5 in a cost-cutting measure. But historian Christopher Shaw says the post office has to be preserved.
It does have a real impact on people's lives.
The current postmaster also wants to raise rates, but Shaw argues it's a public service that should be treated as such.
There's a lot of rural America that would be considered economically inefficient to serve, and so that's why we have a government agency to do it.
In rural communities, traveling nurses can be a godsend. But as Sandra Brown explains, their perks can have a downside.
Better pay, secured housing, and other benefits have persuaded some rural staff nurses to quit their jobs. But Dr. Nicole Rahana of the Rural Nurse Organization says that the recent coverage is misplaced.
Well, I think it's gotten a lot of press, but I don't think it's as prevalent as everybody thinks it is.
The real problem is retaining rural nurses after the pandemic, said Rahana, something solved by recruiting those already living in rural communities.
If we use a grow our own model, we're going to have a long-term provider there.
Rahana added that nurses will be crucial for care of an aging rural population.
Two small cities in Oregon have built a model for improving how police respond to mental illness, homelessness, and addiction.
Someone in a crisis needs de-escalation, respect, safety, and support.
Ebony Morgan leads CAHOOTS in Springfield and Eugene, Oregon, an innovative program that's getting national attention.
I'm inspired to do this work in very personal ways. My father, Charles Morgan, did not get a chance to participate in raising me. He died during an encounter with the police when he was just 25.
CAHOOTS staff don't carry weapons and haven't had a loss of life or serious injury since it started more than 30 years ago. Seasonal time changes are inconvenient for many, but technology has made it a lot easier for some dairy farmers and their cows. For years, Bill Schuler of Schuler Dairy in Southwest Michigan had to physically help his cows to automated milkers.
Whenever the time would change in the spring or the fall, we would start gradually changing our clocks by small increments.
With today's robotic milking machines, Schuler's cows saunter over on their own schedules whenever they're ready, never mind the time on the clock.
This has given us a life. We're not a slave on a dairy farm anymore.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for two in-depth reports. First, David Hatner on the Portland Youth Philharmonic season opener with KBOO's Ken Jones. And then Althea Billings with what's going on at COP26, an interview with Climate Central's Andrew Pershing. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. At 7, Hard Knock Radio. Then at 8, Ear to the Streets of Portland. Tonight's weather, partly cloudy skies early, then getting cloudy with periods of rain later, a low down to 48. Tomorrow's weather, more rain heading into the weekend, a high of 52. Saturday and Sunday, that rain continues. We'll see some highs in the upper 40s. Today in history, on this date in 1922, British archaeologist Howard Carter and his team discovered the entrance of King Tut's tomb in the Valley of the Kings in Egypt. Inside was the mummy of a boy king preserved for more than 3,000 years. Its treasures are now mostly in the Cairo Museum. The quote of the day is from Carter. "We were astonished by the beauty and the refinement of the art displayed by the objects surpassing all we could have imagined. The impression was overwhelming." The jury that will hear the case of three white men accused of killing a black jogger consists of 11 white people and a single black member. Prosecutors in the Ahmaud Arbery case blame defense lawyers for rejecting black jurors. The judge in the case says, quote, "This court has found that there appears to be intentional discrimination." However, Judge Timothy Walmsley says he will still allow the jury to hear the case, saying the discrimination does not mean the court has the authority to reseat the jury. The jurors will return to court tomorrow morning. They will determine the fates of Gregory McMichael, his son Travis, and their neighbor William Bryan Jr. They were accused of shooting and killing Arbery after seeing him jogging in their neighborhood in Glynn County, Georgia. Republicans blocked debate on another voting rights bill. In New Jersey, the razor-thin victory in the governor's race goes down to the Democratic incumbent. And President Biden's social spending package moves closer to a House vote. For more on these stories, here's 2021 Talks.
It is a shame that nearly every Republican in the United States Senate refused to even allow a debate on this issue.
Vice President Kamala Harris was in the Senate chamber Wednesday for a vote on the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, but senators fell short of the 60 votes needed. Alaska's Lisa Murkowski, the only Republican to vote for debate, called on lawmakers to step back from politicization.
I think we should be able to agree to meaningful improvements that will help ensure that All our elections are free, they're fair, and they're accessible to all Americans.
With a procedural no vote from Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, the bill can be revisited. Nearly 24 hours after the polls closed in New Jersey, Democratic incumbent Governor Phil Murphy learned he will remain in office. Murphy was neck and neck with Republican challenger Jack Cittirelli, who surprised pundits by capturing nearly half the votes. However, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy and other Republicans celebrated a so-called red wave in an off-year election.
Today is a wake-up call for Washington Democrats to abandon the partisanship, the extremist agenda of Washington-based programs that cost trillions of dollars and don't have programs that nobody even wants.
The outcome of the election throws into question Democrats' thin congressional majorities ahead of the 2022 midterms. However, party leaders aren't letting the results derail the Biden administration's agenda.
We inherited a disaster from the previous president, a disaster on COVID and a disaster on the economy. And so we have had to collectively act with urgency because we care about everyday Americans.
House Democratic Caucus Chair Hakeem Jeffries says they're finalizing the framework on a social safety net package currently priced around $1.7 trillion. The House Rules Committee convened Wednesday to consider the updated text of the 2,000-page package, which now includes paid family leave, immigration, and local tax deduction programs. Republican Tom Rice of South Carolina questioned the rush on the measure, which he argued has not been adequately analyzed.
This is legislative malpractice that we would even consider moving forward on this with no understanding of its cost and no understanding of its effect on our economy or inflation or on people. This is going to be further fuel for the inflation fire.
Initial House votes on the package are possible as early as today. And a group of Democratic House members called on the Justice Department to prosecute unruly airline passengers. Since the start of the pandemic, there's been a sharp increase of rowdy and confrontational behavior on flights, most related to mask wearing. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Native communities are concerned as voting rights legislation is blocked from debate in the U.S. Senate. And Cherokee Nation offers the COVID-19 vaccine for children ages 5 through 11. With these stories and more, here's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
Republicans Wednesday blocked the Senate from starting debate on the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, which includes provisions for Native voting rights. Native voting rights advocates and tribal leaders were hopeful this week after Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski added her support for a bipartisan version. She was the only Republican to vote to advance the bill. During a hearing on voting last week in the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, which Murkowski vice chairs, she expressed her commitment to Native voting rights.
We think about the right to vote. It is clear. This is a freedom. This is one that is critical and important to American democracy. And the right to vote, we know, has evolved tremendously over time, including with respect to the voting rights of our first peoples. American Indians, Alaska Natives, Native Hawaiians deserve an equal opportunity to participate in our American electoral system and political process, period. Just there has to be that equal opportunity.
Native people face obstacles in the electoral process when it comes to registering to vote, casting votes, having votes counted, and a number of other issues. The voting rights legislation includes provisions to address the unique barriers which disenfranchise Native voters. Tribal leaders and Native vote advocates are calling on Congress and the federal government for protections so Native voters have equal access to voting resources. Democratic senators are denouncing Republicans for blocking the voting rights bill. The Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma is now offering Pfizer COVID-19 vaccines to children ages 5 to 11. The tribe received its first shipments of pediatric vaccines this week with about 1,200 doses. Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. says getting Cherokee children vaccinated will better protect families and tribal communities from spreading the virus. Cherokee Nation Health Services Director Dr. R. Stephen Jones says the pediatric vaccine is another step towards full protection against the virus. The Pfizer vaccine received federal approval this week for emergency use in children 5 to 11. The dose schedule for pediatric use is 2 doses, with the second dose given 3 weeks after the first. Currently, a booster dose for children is not recommended. Since December, the Cherokee Nation has administered more than 85,000 COVID-19 vaccine doses. National Congress of American Indians President Fawn Sharp received diplomatic recognition from the U.S. at the UN Climate Summit this week. The U.S. Department of State announced Sharp fully credentialed as a delegate. According to NCAI, she is the first U.S. tribal leader elected by tribal citizens to receive the diplomatic recognition from the U.S. In a statement, Sharp said she accepts the honor and does so with optimism, pointing to contributions by Native Americans and indigenous people globally to fight climate change. Sharp's attending the summit underway in Glasgow, where she's leading an indigenous delegation. A group of U.S. lawmakers is urging President Biden to rescind medals of honor given to soldiers involved in the Wounded Knee Massacre. A letter sent to President Biden from more than a dozen lawmakers urges him to use his executive authority to revoke the medals. The lawmakers wrote, "It's been more than 130 years since the Wounded Knee Massacre, when U.S. soldiers slaughtered hundreds of men, women, and children on the Pine Ridge Reservation. They're calling for the revocation of 20 medals, saying it's past time to remove the stain in history." Legislation is also in Congress seeking to revoke the medals. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
All across the country, the U.S. Department of Agriculture says there continues to be a slow decline in the number of farming operations. As Mike Mohn reports, protecting the family farm is the focus of a virtual event.
Family farms are navigating a maze of market barriers and climate change threats. While solutions develop, some say producers could learn a thing or two from past crises. A leading advocate in North Dakota is helping to deliver that message. This Saturday, Dakota Resource Council will host its annual meeting virtually. One of the speakers will be Attorney Sarah Vogel, the former North Dakota Ag Commissioner who also led the landmark federal case from the 1980s that protected many farms from foreclosure. Vogel sees similarities in past and current struggles. In the 80s, she and other advocates learned to overcome an unfair appeals process within the USDA.
Back then, the person that would be the hearing officer would often be the person who made the decision that was being appealed. Well, you're not going to get a fair hearing when your judge is also the executioner.
Thanks to reform, she says a more neutral process exists today, giving smaller farmers a bigger voice. And the Resource Council urges policymakers to offer more incentives to producers who want to adopt conservation practices, which can better protect their land from extreme weather events. The USDA says the number of farm operations in North Dakota has fallen to 26,000, with some of the biggest declines in those with the smallest revenue. Vogel says farmers struggling to keep their head above water should amplify calls for patience from lenders. She says leaning on landowners to make abrupt decisions creates a wave of problems seen in the 80s, such as property value declines. Vogel says that's not good for surrounding communities.
Today we see declines in the rural economy and boarded up main streets and so forth. And so a lot of that is connected to the loss of family farmers.
Current farmers point to the need for reforms when it comes to market concentration. They say only a handful of firms control beef and other commodities. This year, the Biden administration announced a series of moves to address those concerns. As for Saturday's meeting, it runs from 12:45 to 5 p.m. You don't have to be a DRC member to listen in. Those interested can email the group for a Zoom link. Mike Mohn, Prairie News Service.
Fall leaves may seem like a nuisance in Oregon this time of year, but they play an important role in the environment. Leaves act like mulch, helping to suppress weeds and fertilize the soil as they break down. Eric Tegedoff talks to a naturalist with the National Wildlife Federation, who says people should leave some of those leaves for their garden beds.
While it might feel natural to rake the leaves in your yard this fall, those leaves might play a more natural role in your garden or lawn. A naturalist for the National Wildlife Federation says it isn't necessary to remove every leaf from the yard, although he notes just letting them all pile up can smother the grass. David Mizajewski says by not raking and bagging all the leaves to be sent to the landfill, you're doing a service to the planet in a number of ways.
When organic matter like leaves go into the landfill, they get buried and they decompose anaerobically without oxygen, which produces methane gas, which is a potent greenhouse gas pollutant that's contributing to global climate change.
He says not bagging leaves also cuts down on the use of gasoline-powered tools like mowers and leaf blowers. He encourages people to consider reducing the size of their lawns, which can be killed by dense layers of leaves, and adding more garden beds, which can benefit from the decaying leaf matter. The leaf layer also is habitat for a number of animal species, including chipmunks, beneficial insects, and spiders. Ms. Ojewski says 94% of moths spend some part of their life cycle in the leaf layer, many in the winter months as pupa. When they emerge, they lay eggs, and moth caterpillars are an important food source for many backyard birds.
So you begin to see how it's all connected. If you get rid of all of those leaves, you wipe out that habitat for all those animals and, you know, the food source for the birds in the spring.
For people looking to add more garden beds, Ms. Ojewski says using fallen leaves could be a way to save money, as they're a natural alternative to buying mulch and fertilizer.
Slowly but surely, you can convert your typical yard into something a little bit more natural and honestly, maybe a little bit more alive and beautiful. And that's kind of what the heart of what we're talking about at the National Wildlife Federation through our Garden for Wildlife movement.
I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, November 4th, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Althea Billings, Eric Tegedoff, Roz Brown, and Mike Moen. The producer is Annette Newell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Native Voice One and Public News Service. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. Thank you so much for listening to the KBOO Evening News. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In-Depth, coming up next.